You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Conference 97, Day 3, 4 p.m., Michael Cottingham.
If I don't answer any particular questions that you have tomorrow or the next day, catch me somewhere. And, you know, I'll try to make myself available sitting down under the shade somewhere if somebody wants a one-on-one confrontation. Bring a pencil and paper so I don't waste my breath. So you write this stuff down. And if you're serious about a consultation and serious about some information and some direction, bring a pencil and paper, write it down, and check it out. If you take the time to ask the question, take the time to take the notes, I'll take the time to tell you what I know and see if I can help you out. Especially if you want to, you know, when you want a more intimate or one-on-one consultation. I mean, that's kind of what I'm here for. I try to cover as many broad spectrum stuff as I can so you walk away with something of value. That's, you know, I mean, we've talked about a lot of different things. Questions to date on some of the things we've covered. If you have questions on some of the ramblings so far, any questions? Questions today? And going once, going twice. Question.
Would you recommend a book for those of us from the Texas area on identifying the planet?
There's a couple books. I recommend the Michael Moore books highly because a lot of the plants in Texas, even though his books are the deserts and canyons southwest, but the desert and canyons west, and the mountains west, and the Pacific west, plants are where you find them. And you'll be amazed at how many plants that grow in the southwest that you can find back east, that you can find in Texas. And a lot of the ecosystems in Texas aren't that much different than parts of New Mexico. So any of Michael Moore's books, not only because they'll cover some of your plants, but because Michael Moore is my most revered and respected teacher. That's why we took the time to film him in the field, to put two films together, to capture his oral tradition on film so that people could learn from it. His anatomy and physiology is immense, and he can paint a picture about the anatomy and physiology of the human body in relationship to the medicinal plant better than anyone else alive. There's also another book, good book. It's the Peterson Field Guide series. I believe it's the Medicinal Plants of the East Coast. It's a lot of nice photographs put out by Stephen Foster and James Duke. Very good for identification. You can see some medicinal uses. Usually you have to have several books. You have to have a really good identification book or two, and you have to have some good medical herbal books. There are very few books that actually combine all of those. Botanical medicine is immense. You want good identification books. You want good books on medical herbalism. And, you know, in the 1800s, probably many of you out there are bibliophiles, book lovers, people who haunt rare bookstores and use bookstores. Try to find old medical texts from the 1800s, specifically the United States Dispensatory or the National Formularies of the 1800s. When you do that, sometimes you can pay $4 or $5 for this book, and other places you'll spend hundreds for the same book. Some people don't recognize the value of it, some people do. The old medical books of the 1800s, especially the United States Dispensatory, that was put out almost every 10 years from about the early 1800s, every 10 years, up until today. They still do the United States Pharmacopoeia, or Pharmacopoeia, as some people say. These dispensatories and these United States Pharmacopoeias list botanical medicines at the height of herbal medicine. It's when science and medicine came together to form probably the best days of herbalism that we've ever had. And that's what doctors used in the 1800s. 90% of what's in those books is herbal medicines. The remaining percentage is used in minerals, sulfur, et cetera, et cetera. They talk a lot about water therapies, the difference between spring water, rain water, well water, river water, lake water, pond water. because each one of these different sources of water have a different series of properties. Rainwater used to be considered incredibly medicinal. These days, if you collect rainwater to capture its medicinal properties of electrically charged rain, you might want to filter it before you drink it because of the air pollution that we have. Stream water, pond water, lake water, it's just not like it once was. In the old days, they used electricity. They used colloidal silver in the 1800s, colloidal gold. They used metals and minerals and things like sulfur and charcoal. So the other 10% that's in these dispensatories are interesting medicines, some of which we don't use anymore today or are not available. These old dispensatories, United States Dispensatory, old national formularies. Tom Brown books are good. Survival insights, medicinal plants, how to use plants for survival, how to build shelters, how to recognize animal tracks. Good source. Tom Brown is an authority, first-hand experience. He lives it. He lived it intensely. He teaches it intensely. His information is first-hand experience. Like the Michael Moore books, Michael Moore not only researches and writes and teaches, but he's owned herb stores. He's taught medicine at medical colleges, anatomy and physiology, doctors, anatomy and physiology, and how herbs affect this, how they affect the human body. Firsthand, you want references that are firsthand experiences by their author. There's a lot of great books out there, but there's nothing more than well-researched, compiled, edited, pretty books. The author is not an herbalist. The author is a good researcher. These books may have had some value. They may have some good pictures and some good recipes, but you want books where the person has done it, picked it, made medicine, used it with thousands and thousands of people, and this is what he or she is writing about. And those are the valuable books, and there are very few of them. Michael Moore, James Duke books, Stephen Foster, these are some that come to mind. Susan Weed, she covers female herbal medicine very elegantly and very accurately. She's one of the elder ladies, the elder witches, you might say, of the herb world. Not a witch, but, that's what they were called as they were being burnt and slaughtered by the thousands in the old days. That's how we lost a lot of our herbal medicine, was we killed off our herbalists, because those who knew about plants and those who helped people use plants for healing, I don't have to explain it. It's a mixture of self-sufficiency, and that's a threat. Midwives were persecuted. Midwives were male, mostly women, but they were female and male healthcare practitioners that helped deliver children. They were often herbalists combined with being able to deliver babies. They were persecuted, destroyed, burnt, declared witches. By who? By the allopathic male medical practitioners of the time. Because midwives had too much power, too much respect for nature, they were too effective, and they didn't cost anything. And they were a threat to the medical business of the days. And so one of the reasons why there was such thing as witchcraft or the persecution of witches was because basically somebody wanted to eliminate somebody else because of greed and money and power. And we lost a lot of herbalists. We lost a lot of tradition, a lot of lore. There's a few herbalists out there, Susan Weed being one of them. James Green, who wrote The Male Herbal, highly recommended for men. The Male Herbal is a sensitive, well-written reflection on male health, prostate problems, prostate cancer. It could be the most important book for men to deal with cancer and health problems that have a tendency to specifically affect men. Prostate problems, reproductive problems, impotence, things of that nature. The Male Herbals by James Green, that's another good book. There's a lot of them out there. That's the ones that come to mind. Any more questions?
Michael, we're getting looking for some kind of a water processor or something, because the water that comes into our homes usually is chlorinated and not all that healthy. Is there any kind of record? recommendation for what we should be using or looking for or considering in order to be able to protect our intake of water.
What kind of water filters are beneficial, or what? You have to spend some time. I found that there's a multi-level marketing scheme out there. There's a company. A multi-level marketing is a very successful way of protecting companies, making lots of money for the companies. Those people who are aggressive actually do well, but it's a form of capitalism that benefits a lot of people. A lot of good products. There's one multi-pure water filters, which is a multi-level. You have to find a distributor of a multi-level marketing, a multi-level marketer of the water, the multi-pure water filters that this company puts out. They have several patents, and in fact, they supply filters to a majority of other companies. So they are the regional patent owners and designers of some of the most sophisticated and effective water filters on the market. $200 to $400, depending on if you want just a sink or if you want a whole house system. These are incredible water filters. You got to find a distributor. I'm not a distributor, but I've used water multi-pures, they're very effective. There's talcum water filters. There's silver nitrate. There's reverse osmosis. They all have their drawbacks. They all have limitations. Sometimes it's a combination of two. You kind of have to, depends maybe what area you live in. Are you working towards parasites and amoebas, or do you have more heavy metals? That might lead, you know, those are the questions you ask yourself. And the best way to make your choice about water filters is to read a lot, educate yourself, look at the different models, and become basically an expert. Then you know what you need. And ask those questions like, what are you trying to filter out? Is it just chlorine? Then a good charcoal filter that doesn't cost too much. Is it chlorine and heavy metals? Is it pesticides, herbicides? Is it is it amoebas and parasites, heavy metals and chlorine? Is it all of those? And that can help you in your choices. And I just found that's what I use. That's what I researched, was the multi-pure. To me, satisfied my needs for chlorinated water and heavy metals.
Is there a difference between drinking distilled water and drinking pure filtered water?
Distilled water, if not done properly, what are those things? Hydrocarbons may not be removed, or maybe, I'm not sure. I know there are some, if distilled water isn't properly distilled, some things can still remain in the water. Good distilled water is probably okay. You know, we get vitamins and minerals from our vegetables, from our plants. The things I worry about is chlorinated water. I want to stay away from chlorinated water as much as possible. Oh, 100%. I'm a smoker. I like to smoke tobacco, even though it's organic. The nicotine and the chlorine are still going to come together to form something quite deadly. So I have to stay away from chlorinated water all the time. Plus, chlorine will kill off your intestinal flora, your flora, your friendly bacteria, your friendly funguses, and as a result of that, you can have so many health problems you wouldn't believe it, just because you don't have enough bacteria, enough flora and fauna in your intestinal tract. You can have candida problems, chronic fatigue problems. You can have an immense amount of problems just because you drink chlorinated water, it kills off the bugs in your gut, the good bugs in your gut. So chlorine is what I wanted to remove. Distilled water versus mineral water, that was your question. Those are some of the things. Chlorinated water, main things are heavy metals, another thing. Pesticides, herbicides, I don't know. One of the things I looked on, it's a Glacier Springs water once. And at first glance, it looks good, the picture's good, but it says bottled in Miami. You know, so it's a multi-billion dollar business of suspect swindling. I mean, there are many companies that I bet just run into a charcoal filter, take out the chlorine, and call it spring water. So buying that type of water, it's a shot in the dark, I think, because it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and we all know when money comes into play, people are going to take shortcuts, be cheats, be greedy, et cetera, et cetera. So the best thing is research the filters and carry your own water. It's one of the most important medicines. It's worth all the energy and effort to do that. Exactly, yeah. And distilled water doesn't assure, depending on the process and who distilled it, that everything is removed. And we often think it's the purest of all the waters. But the hydrocarbons are sometimes very hard to get rid of. Very hard.
How often should I have that? Distilled water is not a pure form of water. At the University of Kansas City, I work in a physical plant, and we had to buy water that's distilled, deionized, and filtered with certain filters, and run for only pot of percolating pipe to be called pure water to a certain length.
That's pretty intense.
Yes.
That's a lot of
it. I required in some of the research labs to trust the pure water. And no test that ever done to make sure that it was.
That's more than what most of these distillers are going to do. They're bottled water.
Water, gasoline's cheap, or corn whiskey, or whatever.
I can pray the word distilled, you know, and we have a lot of lead, and in this factory bowling screen, distilled water, because we take the lead out of the side. Will distilled water take other things that are good out of the side?
I don't know. I don't know enough about that to answer that. Anybody here know? Think I'd be dubious about it. Go ahead.
Well, what I heard about that, I can't confirm that, but if you have distilled water that doesn't have mineral, the thought is that when you drink it, it'll absorb water. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that's just what I heard.
Okay. There seems to be a lot of information out there that maybe that requires a little bit more research and maybe even the industry doesn't know totally. I mean, it sounds like it could go from science to pure water to be very complex to and all the way. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of unanswered questions with that. I could make something up, but I wouldn't be honest. Coming out the ice cubes. I've seen that. I don't know if it's a action of the formation of ice, and there's ice in the box, and it's whisking up some of the water out of the tray and just forming an ice crystal. But I've seen that on my ice cubes. And our water comes out of, our water is geothermal. It's a hot springs water, comes out of a cistern where hot springs, seep out of rocks into a cistern, and then we gravity feed it down to the house. And it's probably about 100, 105 degrees, at the source. And by the time it gets to the house, it's warmer. It's probably, I don't remember other, gauging the temperature. I guess 85. It's not quite body temperature, but it's pretty warm water. I don't know what that was about. But any more questions? All right, I want to talk about an herb called milkthistle. Milkthistle, for 70% of us in this room, can probably be, you'll use it at one point or another in your life. And this could be the most important plant that you ever learn about and ever use for a serious medical problem. Milk thistle. It's a thistle-sized plant. We don't have any growing around here. here, but we could throw seeds out. If we have the seeds of no thistle, we could throw it out, and they would grow with a little water. It's a thistle. Thistles are hard to eradicate. And once they become established, in fact, parts of the United States forbid the sale of milk thistle seeds. I just heard recently that Washington State still allows you to sell milk thistle extract, but the seeds of milk thistle are now outlawed in the health food shops because it becomes a noxious plant, quote, noxious, whatever, end quote, and takes over farmers' fields and pastures, and it will. It'll form an incredible big, giant, thorny rosette with these giant stalks with big purple thistle-like flowers. And if you don't know what thistle is, when we're outside, ask me and I'll point out a thistle. It won't be milk thistle, but it'll give you an idea of what to look for. The leaves of milk thistle are green-white. They're what's called variegated. They have a predominant green on the outside, but they have white blotching running down the middle of the vein going off on lateral or side veins. So it's mottled. It's white, mottled appearance on a dark green leaf. The seeds are what we use of the plant, the seeds of milk thistle. And they contain a substance called silymarin. Silymarin was isolated from milk thistle probably close to 20 years ago in Europe. In France, I think, first, maybe Germany, Spain, Italy, Great Britain, they all did research, and there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of papers that have been written on milk thistle, but specifically on the active ingredient or the active constituent, silymarin. Silymarin is an amazing substance. Now, you can use milk thistle a number of different ways. You can take the seed, you can eat it. I can classify milk thistle as a food / medicine. It's somewhere in between pumpkin and sunflower seeds in taste. So you could eat milk thistle seeds on a regular basis, bring them into your diet as another seed, contain oil, protein, and the silymarin. You can also make an alcohol extract from milk thistle seeds. You make a dry seed extract, a 1-5 ratio, and you'll learn about this later on when I show you that. And after you've made the extract, then you go through another process to make what's called a glycerite. You basically double boil your herbal extract, remove all the alcohol, and put glycerin in. And it's an alcohol evaporative process. You remove the alcohol and transfer it into glycerin. Glycerin is a very sweet substance, somewhere between alcohol and water in its solvency. It's a weak solvent. Those with the science background, would you classify glycerin as almost, it's almost like an alcohol? Is that correct? For those that may know about glycerin on the molecular level, I always classify glycerin as it's very similar to alcohol in its solvency strength, but its molecular structure is a little bit different, but it's a solvent. It's sweet tasting, and it's one of the solvents that we use in herbal medicine. When you make a milk thistle, you either eat the seeds, or you make an alcohol extract to get all the silymarin out, then you evaporate the alcohol, and you now have a sweet tasting glycerin. Because the reason why, it's a liver herb. Milk thistle is a liver herb, and in many conditions, you don't want any alcohol. You know, like when you're treating cirrhosis of the liver, you don't want any alcohol. And so we make alcohol-free glycerites, as we call them, using this substance, glycerin, after we've initially extracted the seeds. It's hard to describe because it's not, there's several processes I'm talking about here. Milk thistle seeds by themselves can be eaten. You can take a milk thistle glycerite, and you need to either eat the seeds or use an alcohol glycerin extract because it's not water soluble. The silymarin you will not get if you make a tea from it. So I'm trying to belabor this. You have to use either the extract or you have to eat the seeds in order to get the silymarin, and the silymarin is what you're after. It's not water soluble. You can't make a tea from the seeds. So that gives you a little background on maybe on the preparations and such. It's a liver herb. And the liver by itself, let's talk about the liver for a moment. The liver is the organ that filters waste. It's the organ that's responsible for a major portion. There's the liver-stomach relationship and digestion. The liver's important in filtering The liver is important in assimilating and moving vitamins into the right, and minerals into the right areas of the body. The liver is important for making the immune system very strong. By the liver, in a various way, the liver is responsible for helping to make red blood cells, absorb vitamins, eliminate waste. The liver is responsible for metabolic transfer, absorption, elimination. The liver is the first organ online to deal with heavy metals and toxins. It has to process these, filter these, direct these to be removed out. The liver deals with fats and cholesterols in conjunction with the gallbladder. The liver is important. I mean, those are just some topics on some things that the liver does. It does many more things. When the liver becomes diseased or becomes exposed to solvents like alcohol, in the case of alcoholism and cirrhosis of the liver, industrial solvents, pharmaceutical drugs, recreational drugs, all these things can damage the liver, causing cirrhosis. Cirrhosis of the liver is when part of the liver gets basically damaged and shut down and becomes hard. That's what cirrhoted means, the hardening or hardened liver. You have a part of your liver that's shut down, no longer making cells, no longer doing all those various functions. People die from cirrhosis of the liver. 20, 30, 40, 50% of your liver becomes cirrhoted. There isn't much that Western medicine has to offer you. Basically, some narcotics for the pain and put you on the list for a liver transplant. That's here in this country. Now in Europe, if you were to have cirrhosis of the liver, they would prescribe an intravenous solution or a concentrate of silymarin, because what silymarin does is it regenerates liver cells. And I have seen through studies that I have performed in conjunction with doctors for people with a 40% cirrhotic liver, we have watched a 40% cirrhotic liver within 6 months go from 30 to 20 to 10 back to normal. All of the cirrhosis was eliminated through the use, not of the intravenous solution that they have in Europe. We can't get it. It's illegal here to get milk-thistle, intravenous injections of milk-thistle here. Number one, in Europe, nobody gets liver transplants because milk-thistle is available pharmaceutically, intravenously, and you could be having liver failure due to a massive exposure of solvents, and they will shoot you up with so much intravenous silymarin that immediately the solvents stop damaging the liver and the cells begin to grow in the liver and your liver cells regenerate and tissue comes back. And the reason why, they found that this active chemical, silymarin, actually puts a protective membrane around each individual liver cell, millions of cells in the liver. And a healthy liver will make its own cells to keep business going. You know, I mean, it's only when you become diseased or exposed to solvents or toxins is when the liver can't keep up with the production of cells. A healthy liver will make all the cells it needs, but in the case of solvent poisoning, Amanita mushroom poisoning, toxins of severe nature that damage the liver, that literally dissolve the liver, they will shoot people up with intravenous solutions of milk thistle, and immediately the decay will stop. Cells will regenerate. It's because that silymarin puts a protective membrane around each and every cell in the liver. And this membrane allows all the liver functions to take place, but prevents toxins and heavy metals and solvents from reaching those cells. What I'm saying is that you take milk thistle seeds, you take milk thistle extract, or you're in Europe and you do an intravenous injection of milk thistle, what you receive is a protective membrane around all of your liver cells. That all the poisons and toxins in the environment, or the poison that may be in your system destroying your liver right then and there, do not reach the liver anymore. But the liver's functions can carry on. I don't know if I said that well enough, but what I said is one of the most, that's why it's the most important herb, really, in today's world. There's no other substance on the face of the earth that actually will put a protective membrane around each and every liver cell. Now, that's where all the research was focused. They also show that the possible peripheral research showed that it puts that cell around the kidneys, that membrane around the kidney cells, around the spleen, and around the brain. Now, if that is true, it's more immense and more important than ever before. Question?
Why is it illegal?
Intravenous, why is it illegal? Why is milk thistle, intravenous solution of milk thistle, of thistlemarin, illegal in this country? It would take a lot of millions of dollars. The Europeans aren't that wrapped up into that heavy duty of spending that many millions of dollars to approve something that helps thousands and millions of people. In this country, the average pharmaceutical drug, I forget the latest statistic, but the last time I remember it, the average pharmaceutical drug takes $250 million to research, market, develop, and get out approved. Now, they could probably get their money back with a silymarin concentrator, but the problem is silymarin is readily available in milk thistle seeds. Silymarin in large in very effective quantities. Silymarin is available in good quality herbal extracts, enough silymarin.
You're saying that the silymarin is in the seeds and not in the milk thistle itself?
It's throughout the whole plant, but concentrated medicinally. The silymarin is concentrated medicinally, mostly in the seeds.
So if you want to help your liver, really give it some help, you would do something with the seeds instead of the plant. Is that correct?
Yes. Anything from protecting yourself from environmental toxins to dealing with cirrhosis of the liver. You should want to use the seeds over any other part of the plant. And if you see a thistle, it's really hard to use the other parts of the plant because they're very spiny, very thorny, and very hard to deal with. When milk thistle is very young and first coming up and the spines aren't formed, hardened, they're not hard-formed spines, you can harvest the young shoots and use it as a vegetable. And there's enough silymarin in that to help provide the liver with good medicine. But most of the medicinal value is locked in the seeds. I think it may be a matter of time before, and the intravenous solution will be here in this country. It'll be hard to stop. In the case of, why does the milk thistle have to be intravenous? That's a question. She's asking, why does the milk thistle have to be intravenous? Well, what they do, it doesn't have to be intravenous. I'm saying you can eat the seeds of milk thistle. I'm also saying that you can make an herbal extract from the seeds and use that. But in serious situations, I'm going to give you an example to explain this. Those of you in California, was it last year or was very recent? It was within 2 years. Maybe it was even last year. But those people went out, a whole group of people, and ate the Amanita phalloides mushroom. Amanita phalloides mushroom, the death cap mushroom. Anybody remember that story? Sacramento, San Francisco, Oakland, maybe somewhere in that area. Well, several of those people got a liver transplant, didn't they? And several of them died. In fact, I think one of the heirs to Sebastiani, you know, mushrooms are great. They're gourmet. They're good tasting. There's a lot of nutrition. There's like a lot of people like to go out and hunt them because they taste good. They make really, and they're very good medicines and filled full of vitamins and minerals. The heir to Sebastiani wines evidently ate one of these death cap mushrooms. So some people died in California. Some people ended up, I think a little girl ended up with a liver transplant. I don't know if she died or lived as a result of the transplant. But you know what? That would have never happened in Europe because these people would have got the concentrate of silymarin. For most of us, just milk thistle seeds and extracts enough. But when you're dying of liver failure, when you take Amanita phalloides mushroom, the substance thalidine is literally dissolving your liver. You don't have time for an herbal extract. You need the silymarin extracted concentrate, which can only be delivered intravenously. Does that sort of answer your question? There are times when your liver is so shut down and so damaged, you don't have time to do the safe, simple, long-term herbal medicine. You need to go to the concentrate. And that's what they've done in Europe. They've concentrated the silymarin so that in these life-saving situations where people used to die Now they don't die anymore because they can go to the hospital, get an intravenous injection of silymarin, and their liver stops breaking down and immediately begins to regenerate. You know, the fatality rate in France for the dead cat mushroom ingestion used to be, the fatality rate used to be over 90%. That was over 15 years ago. Now that they use milk thistle in the hospitals and for these particular types of mushroom poisonings, the fatality rate has dropped to less than 1%. In this country, those people died, and those people, the only choice that was offered to these people was a liver transplant. Across the ocean, nobody's dying from this same mushroom because of the intravenous silymarin solution. That, I mean, I don't know why it's not in this country. It saves lives. Liver transplant is a big, well, liver disease is the third largest killer in this country. And I'll tell you what, for 90% of all those liver problems, milk thistle would be the answer. Now, we're talking about an industry. 90% of these people would benefit, get healed, go on about a healthy life if they had access to milk thistle. This country is a medical monster, a medical business. Between the insurance, the pharmaceutical drug companies, and everything else in between, it's a monster. And if you brought milk thistle in intravenously, the third largest disease would not long, the third largest problem in health, liver disease, would not be a problem anymore. It'd be pushed down to 20th or 50th because of one plant and one isolated chemical, the silymarin. And that's probably why it's not in this country, to be honest with you. It's not because of red tape. It's because that's the bottom line. A lot of people would lose money, you know. A lot of money. I mean, how much does a liver transplant cost?
I want to just say my mother's dying of cirrhosis. She got it from diabetes, so you can get it from other health problems. And I know what you're saying, and so this help is not available with her. He's talking about this, so we're using the extract. He's talking about with her. And she has noticed some improvement, although I still don't think she can live because she needs more than what we can legally do for her here.
Right. Your mother is using milk thistle because she has cirrhosis. And there's a lot of factors. We're talking about maybe you're 15 years old, 20 years old, 35, 45, 55 years old. These medicines can make the difference.
That treatment is available. The problem is you have to go to Europe to get it, and most people can't afford that treatment.
Correct, Bill. Yeah, that treatment, that silymarin injections, is available if you leave the country to get it. The closest thing you can get now is a dry powder concentrate of 85% silymarin. It is available now, and you have to put it in capsules and take it. That's the latest thing that's become available. You can get the dry powder, but you can make an intravenous solution of it without risk, and that is now available. 85 to 90% silymarin powder is available.
What is the time frame?
What is the time frame between taking milk thistle and a healthy liver again? It's a hard question. I'll give you some examples of other reasons and other parameters to use milk thistle. Cirrhosis of the liver is a major problem. Milk thistle is an herb to research. Keep in mind, it can save your life. It can prevent a liver transplant. I don't think any of us in this room, I know I can't afford a liver transplant. And I'm glad I know about milk thistle. And I've actually seen it work so many times with science backing it up, with doctors. I've got 12 doctors in our town using milk thistle on a regular basis because it's such an important herb in their practice. They use it to improve the health of their liver on a number of different planes, which affects so many different problems. The dermatologist in town uses milk thistle. Highly recommends it. He sends people down by the droves to the herb store for milk thistle, and he's the dermatologist. Now you're going to say, what skin problems and liver have to do with each other? The liver is the main organ that governs the quality of the skin. Without the liver being healthy, your skin won't be healthy. If your liver's not healthy, your skin won't be healthy. Any skin problem you see on the surface is a reflection of the 80% of the time the liver, the other 20% of the time the kidneys, and often a combination of both. Eczema, acne, psoriasis, almost all dermatological problems, skin allergic reactions, are not necessarily what I would call skin problems. They are liver problems. They are a sign. You see it on the skin, but it's actually going on in the liver. The skin is the largest organ system in the body, but it takes the liver and kidneys to maintain its health. So when you see a problem on the surface, like eczema, psoriasis, these weird dermatological problems, acne, these are liver problems. To give you an example, remember jaundice. Babies get jaundice, right? We know, all of us who know a little bit about medicine, know that jaundice is not, it's a liver problem. If you've had a child who's had jaundice, the doctor says, well, the skin's going to turn yellow, the eyes will turn a little yellow, but it's because of a vitamin deficiency, you need a little bit more sun, you know, this and that. But basically, those who ask the questions find out that it's a liver problem. But you see it in the skin. And so, as a result, we use milk thistle to treat skin problems. And when I started doing that, the success rate of results went from pretty good with skin ointments and kind of cleansing teas to almost 100% for eczema, almost 100% for psoriasis. If you try to find some pharmaceutical medicine that will deal with eczema and psoriasis, on that success level of almost 100%. Drinking more water, taking a lot of milk thistle, if you have psoriasis, I could almost stand up here and guarantee that within 2 weeks, if you took, we sat down and talked, you had psoriasis, I recommended X amount of milk thistle, X amount of water, and if you took to that and stayed to that, if you didn't see a result, a beneficial result, you'd be the first person I ever met out of the thousands that I've recommended milk thistle to.
I was just going to ask, what's the situation in Mexico? I understand you can get a lot of things over there that might be available in Europe.
I guess it's fine. I've asked frequently because I've perused the pharmacies and looked for obscure medicines that may be of benefit in Mexico. And I imagine you might be able to order it. You might be able to get it in through the right channels. I don't speak fluent Spanish, but if I did, I bet I could find, I could get a conversation going, talk to a pharmacist, and might be able, I think you could bring it up. No one so far has been able to, even a few people that can speak Spanish, who said they had tried, but I don't know if they did or not. So I don't know about the availability. As of today, as the last time we tried, maybe a month ago, no such luck.
Could you give us the botanical name?
You bet. The botanical name for milk thistle, that's your question, what is the botanical name of milk thistle, is psyllium. S-I-L-Y-B-U-M, I believe. You know, I'm kind of a writer, not a speller. That's what editors are for. Psyllium marinarum. M-A-R something. You can look in one of the books in the back and you can get the exact spelling. I could probably spell it about 11 in the morning, but now I don't think I could spell it. Psyllium marinarum, and the active constituent of milk thistle seeds is psyllium. So the liver governs the quality of the skin by improving the functions of the liver, by improving the filtration of the liver, by bringing liver health up. You can improve the skin, digestion, eyesight, constipation problems, fat absorption problems. A lot of things. But if you have skin problems, I suggest you try milk thistle for almost any skin problem.
What about liver spots?
Liver spots. Liver spots and the liver can be a number of different things. You might want to talk later on, but without a doubt, milk thistle. Without a doubt. You're not going to get any overnight results or any 2 week massive results. That's something you're going to take a little bit further, maybe after 2 months. Not a continuous use, but maybe a month of heavy use, then you start tapering off. If you want, I'll tell you more specific doses, and then we talk about a few other things, because it might be some kidney herbs too. But milk thistle for sure, absolutely, without a doubt. You will get some improvement, you know, and maybe a lot. Depending. It might be just, how long have you had it? A couple years. There might be some other things that we can tie in.
Because if you've had them 20 years, it might be congenital or inherited. But if you only had them for a few years, milk thistle, you probably do really well with milk thistle. It's probably a good time to try it. Milk thistle is the most important plant that you probably can maybe take. All the plants have some value and some importance. But let's face it, there's heavy metals everywhere, polluted water everywhere, toxins everywhere. We ingest toxins, we drink a lot of coffee, we smoke a lot of tobacco, we eat polluted food, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Our environment has these elements in them. The more you read about milk thistle, the more you use it, the more protected your liver will be from these problems in our environment. And if you get some serious problems, like cirrhosis, like eczema, like psoriasis, you will find about the only answer available in this country. Because I'll tell you what, those of you who know medicine, some of you out here, there may be doctors out here, those of you who know what I'm talking about, know this point, you know there's nothing for cirrhosis in this country. You know there's nothing for eczema because you get it, it keeps coming back every once in a while, and it may temporarily go away, but you haven't addressed the real problem. Most dermatological problems are reoccurring. Eczema, dermatological problems, psoriasis keeps coming back. You know that our medicine system as it is has nothing to offer for these problems. If you're somebody who takes cortisone, somebody who takes anti-inflammatory drugs, somebody who's on a lot of prescription medicines, you need to take milk thistle because those drugs are going to stress the liver and they're going to damage the liver. And milk thistle can keep those drugs, especially the anti-inflammatory drugs like cortisone, prednisone. Asthmatics who use inhalers, it's often a prednisone-based drug, anti-inflammatory. These drugs take the toll on the liver and set the stage for massive disease and illness later on. These drugs, these anti-inflammatory pharmaceutical drugs that are available, destroy the liver. And there's this much information available for those who care to show and prove that. Good question.
Two words, SILYBUM.
Okay.
And the second word is MARIANUM.
Excellent. I forgot the Y in SILYBUM. Michael Moore, he's one of the most fantastic herbalists on the face of the earth. But your question is spelling sometimes, too. Questions? Did you have a question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's got a spelling of Y-U-M.
S-I-L-Y-P-Y-U-M.
Okay.
Are we going to
this is in Michael Miller's book. I was just going to ask, if I wanted to do something like preventative maintenance, could I eat kernel seeds or could I eat
How many seeds? What is the dosage range? You're asking how many seeds you can eat, whether they have toxicity. Of the milk thistle seeds, there is no known toxicity. It's incredible. The only side effect that you will get that may be irritating, if you take too much milk thistle, you'll end up with a laxative effect. And what you have to do then is decrease the amount. You can eat the seeds. Bring them in. We're talking about the most important plant medicine that I've yet to. I mean, the case histories that I could relate of what I've terminal cases, liver shutters, cirrhotic liver cases, et cetera, et cetera. It's an amazing plant. And here, the side effects, I mean, all plants have some side effects. Here, the worst side effect is a laxative effect, which, believe it or not, those people who are usually liver deficient, liver stressed, who have cirrhosis of the liver, who have eczema, who have psoriasis, all have a tendency to be constipated anyways. And here's an herb that you take. I mean, it's almost, some people who have serious liver weakness and deficiencies by nature will be constipated. And so here's a plan that is ultimate for rebuilding liver cells, for negating toxins and the damage to the cells, and the side effect is a laxative. With most of those people in those situations. So it's not a bad plan. I mean, it has no known toxicity. Incredible amounts are given. In the case of cirrhosis and some of these serious exposures to solvents, you're really going to have to take a lot of it, a lot of milk thistle. Let's talk about a maintenance dose for, let's say, the average human in this room, whatever that is. There's no average human in here. But the average person with no liver major liver problem, just the normal liver stress and liver anxiety and liver problems that we all have at the least, you might want to eat, half teaspoon of seeds, 2 or 3, 4 times a week. You can grind the seeds up, put them in breads. You can grind the seeds up, sprinkle it on your salad. You can grind the seeds up, put it in soups. Eat it. Straight seeds, chew them, eat them, cook with them. Heat doesn't destroy the silomarin. That plant is very hardy. It takes alcohol, it takes ingestion to break down and to absorb the silomarin. Heat doesn't really affect it and destroy the silomarin at all that I've seen. No research. It's very heat stable. So you can cook with it. You can also use an extract, a non-alcohol glyceride, maybe 2 or 3 times a week. Or if you know you've been exposed to a solvent. If you're a painter, if you're a welder, if you're somebody who, a mechanic, if you're somebody who works with solvents on a daily basis, you should be taking milk thistle. Mechanics, painters, people who work with solvents on a daily basis have smoked a lot because their weak livers require smoking as a stimulation for digestion. They usually drink a lot more alcohol. They are exposed to solvents. They usually are good drinkers. And they usually die of a liver deficiency or a liver problem. So if you're exposed to solvents on any level, whether it's artistic or industrial, use milk thistle to protect you on the job site and at home. Anybody who, I won't ramble. Questions about milk thistle, that's the most important thing. If you ask me questions about milk thistle that may pertain to you or you may want to know. Canadian thistle, would that be like milk thistle? No, there's sow thistles, there's Canadian thistle. Those are all have different Latin names. Milk thistle is actually milk thistle is the only thistle that I've ever seen that has a variegated leaf structure, the green and white leaf structure. You're asking pure chlorines, acids, and absolutely. You're asking if milk thistle will help you be protected from. That answers your own question. You better believe it. Those are all solvents. Those are all toxic. They all. Remember, the liver is the first organ to deal with these. Whether you breathe them, whether you absorb them through the skin. I mean, you may get immediate skin reaction, but the real organ, the first organ that comes in contact with these solvents, whether you touch them on your skin, whether you breathe the vapors, is the liver. You better believe it. In fact, it can make, say you were to do that and totally be absorbed into it for many years, you might die as a result of cirrhosis of the liver. Do your job being exposed to this, even if you take precautions, because, and say you were drinking a lot, smoking a lot, stressing yourself out, all the other things that lead to weak, distressed livers. How about strong acids? All acids, all household chemicals, bleaches, all of that, all the industrial solvents, all of the cleaning agents, all the mechanical solvents, those all affect the liver. And if you do it for a long period of time, you can get cancer from using those things. And the reason why you get cancer is because you've stressed your liver out, and your liver can no longer keep you healthy fighting cancer. That's how you get the cancer. As you get exposed to certain substances, it weakens the liver. The liver no longer can keep you fighting healthy against cancer cells, and they take hold. So it becomes a very important, any solvents, any chemicals, any substances that you may read about, any of these things that affect the liver, milk thistle. I mean, it's safe, it's benign, it has no toxicity. You can treat it as a food / medicine, and in those cases, when you want to use it as a medicine, cirrhosis of the liver is a killer. And here I'm telling you about something that actually will save your life if the conditions are right. If you take enough of it, if you stop your alcohol abuse, you stop your exposure to solvents and things like that. So any solvents, acids, or chemicals.
Can you get this in the Northeast?
You can buy the extract in a lot of herb stores and health food stores, and some of those, that 85% concentrate can be obtained. Yeah, it can be obtained. Just have to have a good health food store, or if you have an herb store. No, but you can get it to grow. It's a Mediterranean plant that naturalized in North America. And it is a waste field plant. It grows anywhere you lay the seed down, basically. It's very, very hardy.
Is that the first time it's done for other cancer, like colon cancer, other things that could develop? Would it send some trauma to any other area that would be potentially at risk for cancer?
Meaning like the liver, is it's working with the liver for other types of cancers, or?
In other words, if someone had a problem in the colon, and you know, the doctor says, well, this isn't cancerous now, we're going to remove this polyp, whatever, but you are at risk for this in the future, because you had this situation. Is that something that could be addressed by strengthening the function of the liver using this?
Absolutely. All cancers has something to do with the immune system, and the liver is one of the main players in the immune system. So anytime you have cancer, chronic fatigue syndrome, immune system deficiencies, HIV, AIDS, hepatitis, any virus infections that are weakening you, strengthening the liver with milk thistle, strengthening the kidneys by more water, strengthening the digestion system by starting to eat maybe the appropriate foods. You bet. You can't really address the immune system without addressing the liver in many cases. And milk thistle is a very good herb to address the immune system weaknesses with good results. If it's ground up seed put into capsules or that concentrated extract, that's fine. Ingestion. You need to eat it or use a alcohol glycerite transfer extract.
I don't know if it's anything to do with the liver or not, but I've heard from many people that it's shingles. And I know it affects shingles. Is that?
Right. You can work with the liver with shingles, but shingles is a herpes virus. And it's a nerve-ending retrograde virus. So I'll use milk thistle to strengthen the liver because definitely it plays a role. But what I use is St. John's wort. It's probably the best herpes medicine, and it's specific for shingles because shingles is a herpes. Herpes simplex is the cold sore. Herpes zoster is the shingles, and it can have some relationship to chickenpox early on. It's definitely an immune system viral problem that the liver plays a role in. In fact, I don't know how many percentages of them. A lot of the time, I would put a 2-ounce bottle with maybe 30% milk thistle and 2/3 hypericum or St. John's wort in the formula. The St. John's wort is antiviral. It's specifically antiviral for retrograde viruses like the herpes virus, and it also rebuilds the nervous system, helps to stimulate the growth of the myelin sheath. At the end of the nerve endings, I may have pronounced it wrong, but the sheath that the protective curve.
That's it for today, folks. Good night, and God bless each and every one of you. For those of you listening on satellite, we just got on satellite. We had problems with the hookup to the uplink to the satellite, and so we are now on satellite, and we will resume the regular programming for the rest of the evening. This is the Voice of Freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Ladies and gentlemen, and affiliate stations, we were just able to get up on the satellite due to technical difficulties at the uplink site. We apologize for any difficulties this may have caused our affiliate stations or our regular listeners, and we are doing all that we can to make sure that the problem is fixed, but we cannot guarantee that we will not have technical problems at any time in the future. Thank you for your patience and for your continued listenership to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
We remind our affiliate stations and the listeners to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network that the hour of the time will be rerun later this evening at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. Please, if you would like to hear it, talk to your local...